This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Summer's here, and with it, these hot, lazy days, comes that surge in festivals across North Carolina. Thousands of people getting ready for the big celebrations like the 4th of July fireworks or looking forward to the National Folk Festival here in North Carolina just in a few months. But you know there are smaller events. You've got Christmas in July, the festival in West Jefferson. You got the Pumpkin Festival in Youngsville. These and many, many more tell the stories of particular places and people in North Carolina. And we will explore the state through its festivals today. Joining me first is Molly Matlock. She's performing arts director at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Hello, Molly. Good to
have
you here.
Hi. I'm actually performing arts manager. I work for George Holt, who is the performing arts director who
there we
founded
go.
Our program.
There we go. I wanted to give you a promotion. It's I'm sure George would understand. He's got lots of opportunities. Also with us is Andrea Lawson. Andrea Lawson, she is community engagement director with the North Carolina Arts Council's African American Heritage Commission. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Let's get a sense, Andrea, from you of the scope of the kind of festivals here in North Carolina, particularly in the summer and beyond.
Sure. In the summer, you know, our state is so vast, from the mountains to the coast, so you have things like the Brevard Music Center out in Brevard, their whole music center there, Leaf, downtown Asheville, all the way to our central areas in the Piedmont area festivals, to here in Durham, the American Dance Festival, and then further out, like the Duck Jazz Festival in Duck, North Carolina on the coast.
Duck Jazz. I didn't know ducks played as well. You can imagine.
Ducks float, they play, and have a great old time
the
out there.
Duck Jazz Festival. It's so great. And again, and that also expresses the variety of the, I mean, summer music festivals, food festivals, all sorts of things.
Food, dance, culture. And we have a number of different festivals that will happen with your learning of cultures. Like you had mentioned, the Folk Festival that's going to happen in Greensboro. And then also you have the Jones County Heritage Festival about rural farming and heritage there and culture and heritage of that. The African American Cultural Festival and then the celebration that happens in January. You have a lot.
Molly, give us a sense of what purpose they serve. Obviously, they're a lot of fun. It's a great way to enjoy the summer. But what else do they tell us about ourselves, do you think?
Well, I do think that we can kind of understand North Carolina identity as a whole by taking a comprehensive look at all the festivals that we have. They kind of reflect ourselves back to us. For example, the Meharan Powwows in Hosky, North Carolina, function for them to practice sacred traditions, but also to share their Iroquois-based heritage with the larger public so that they have a voice within that public. You also have things like the Mount Airy Fiddlers Convention, where people have, for generations, grown up within that context and found their sense of connection, maybe not just within Mount Airy, but from many, many places coming together for that one tradition each year. And then you have things like Shikori Hills Grassroots Festival, the Lake Eden Arts Festival, known as LEAF, and like you said, the Folk Festival in Greensboro that are actually exposing people to traditions from all over the world, not just their localized traditions, but many traditions.
Yeah, it's interesting that people would choose to come here for those national festivals if you're going to do that kind of thing. A lot of folks think North Carolina is kind of ground zero for that kind of, even a national festival. So, and Molly, I know your work at the North Carolina Museum of Art, you've looked at the way museums have changed over time, again, to reflect this very diversity.
Yeah, I'm kind of focused on this idea of social identity right now. And I feel like changes within museum structures and programming reflect changes in the larger society. We were talking earlier about how 20 years ago, museums started bringing performing arts into their art museum settings. So visual arts were not the only definition of art. You started having broader ways of looking at what that definition is. And now I think one of the benefits of informational overload and maybe shorter attention spans is that we demand constant stimulation and more engagement, more direct and active engagement versus just passive engagement. And so art museums right now are trying to find out who they are within that context. And I think one of the ways that our museum is trying to figure out who we are is by engaging many members of the community in helping us shape and build our programming.
Yeah, it talks about the sort of the dynamic byplay and interplay of these two forces when it comes to cultural art production, right? There's people producing their stuff in their own place, and then there's sort of centralizing it where everybody can go to a central place and get the various cultures from all over the state.
Yeah.
Well, and Andrea, you talked about a particular festival in Goldsboro that represents kind of how small these can be, but also how precious. Tell us about Jazz on George.
Well, Jazz on George is a great community gathering where just this corner, Jazz on George, and folks just bring their chairs. There's a stage. There's a few vendors, but it's all about the music and community coming together and enjoying and sitting together. And
but it's a festival that takes place every. How long has it been going on, roughly? Do you have an idea?
It's been going on for probably 5 to 7 years. It's been going on for a little while.
Yeah, but it's just one street corner, right?
Yeah, one street corner. Yeah. And now they also now have a Wayne County jazz showcase, so they've expanded, and they have that once every third Friday or something like that.
And that's jazz. And so, if you were there last year, for instance, you would have heard the music of Nicholas Cole. Let's listen. Goldsboro native Nicholas Cole, you missed him. He played last year at the Jazz on George Festival. But give us a sense, because again, some of these festivals that we have talked about and will talk about, we can make the connection pretty easily. But jazz in Goldsboro may not be something that comes to mind as a connection quite quickly.
Well, there's an interesting connection because it's a part of the African-American music trail of Eastern North Carolina, which are a number of eight counties in that area. So you have rich culture and jazz experience and funk music also with Kinston and Lenore County, and then you have Greenville, Pitt. So you have a number of different, there's the music, it's like there's a, the water must be so rich in music there because there's so many folks there. Mm-hmm. So you have lots of different jazz experience, and they've learned from other musicians, that other music educators and musicians too.
So it's a way for us to remind ourselves about the culture and about what has come from those waters, and also to nurture younger musicians in the craft. You even told me, I think was it last year, there was we talked about Nicholas Cole, who was playing with the guy who did like singing telegrams, right?
Yeah, the gentleman from Pitt County that does singing telegrams, and I got to actually hear him sing in his beautiful voice. So that was nice to hear him perform with Nicholas Cole back then. So
all kinds of things that you wouldn't get to see otherwise. Well, one of the longest running festivals is a celebration of the Scottish influence in Western North Carolina. And joining us now is Frank Vance. He's the former director of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games. Frank Vance, welcome to the State of Things.
Well, thank you, Frank.
Give us a brief history of the Highland Games, will you?
Actually, Grandfather began one of the first games in the country. I believe there might have been one games before in Roundtree, Connecticut. But in 1956, it began with Donald McDonald. And he was a reporter at the Observer in Charlotte, and he had made a trip back to Scotland to visit his family roots, and he became very excited about the culture and how similar the culture was in North Carolina. And when he came back, he wanted to give an injection of Scottish culture once again in North Carolina, and he had written an article in the Charlotte Observer, and it had been picked up by a lot of people in North Carolina, one being Mrs. Morton, who was Agnes McRae Morton. She was a descendant of Alexander McRae and Hugh Morton, who owned Grandfather Mountain. And she was very intrigued by it and invited him up to Grandfather.
So how much of this has to do with the fact that the Highlands are Highlands and there's a great sort of resemblance there? And was there much in the way of Scottish migration? I mean, strictly Scottish,
yes,
not Scots-Irish.
Definitely. What happened in the early 1700s, you had a lot of the Klans came to North Carolina. It was a direct immigration route. In Canada was one, Cape Breton, and then North Carolina was the main two direct routes. And the reason they came to North Carolina was we had a colonial governor by the name of Johnston, and he was Scottish, and he invited a lot of the Scottish people to come to North Carolina. However, at the same time, people were losing their land in Scotland, and the people, there are a few people own most of the land in Scotland, the lords, and when the Brits took over, they no longer needed soldiers, no longer needed the warriors and the farmers that farmed their land. They brought in shepherds and had large shops of flocks of sheep, and they moved down to England, the people that owned the land. And so the people that were there had nowhere to go. So we had tremendous immigration.
We may see reverse immigration now that Scotland may go its own way. Who knows? This may end the games. But tell me, just give me a brief idea what kind of activities we see. What are some of the games?
Well, some of the things you're going to see is opening ceremony, which is a torchlight ceremony on Thursday night. And that it is taken. Larry Long developed that from what the early Scottish chieftains used to do when they called their warriors to war to fight for their land. And they would slaughter a sheep and put the blood on a torch, and then a runner would run around to the different villages and different farms for the people to collect at a certain place to stand with a clan. And the clan, of course, was family. It was each family developed their own people, and they were loyal to the chief, and he was the leader. And whatever he said, they did.
So the opening ceremony mirrors very much that call to arms.
It mirrors that, and we also form a St. Andrew's cross, and each clan is called out, and they say they're here. And one reason they're here in North Carolina is the terrain is very, very similar to Scotland. I was in Scotland in '97 and went into a park over there where the trees had not been cut. And I thought I was right here at Grandfather Mountain. It was so similar.
Frank Vance, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Frank Vance.
Our games, of course, begins July the 7th and through the 7th, 8th, and 9th.
We've got all that information at our website. Thank you so much, Frank Vance, former director of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games. Well, let's find out about some more across the state. If there's one thing that we can agree on in North Carolina, it is to not agree about barbecue. And joining us now is Jan Parsons. She's the organizer of the Barbecue on the News Festival in Kinston. Hello, Jan.
Hi, it's great to be with you today.
Good to be with you. And we now all know about food in Kinston, but taking us back to barbecue, and I guess the main attraction is the cook-off, right?
Well, the main attraction is the cook-off, but it is certainly not the only thing that we have going on during our festival. We feature a large amount of art during the festival. So it's art, history, just so much to do during our festival. A lot for kids and ag tourism featured. And coming back with that, we come back to the food once again, to our agriculture with our pork that the North Carolina Pork Council sanctions our cook-off. And we have, this past year, we had 90 cook teams competing for the prizes.
Now, does Vivian Howard play much of a role down there, having been brought some attention to Kinston and food?
Vivian has her own little competition, and it is Southern Sides competition. And each year, she chooses a Southern Side that folks can enter there. For example, this year it was slaw, so they could enter their slaw into that competition. And she helps judge, and as well as four other judges, and they choose the slaw that's the winning slaw.
Now, there's probably no argument over this. So this is Eastern barbecue, right? You don't mess with tomatoes, do you?
Is there another barbecue other than Eastern Barbecue?
I just had to ask. It was my responsibility to ask you, but I just wanted to make sure.
Well, we know how to do barbecue. You know, our pork is so good and it's cooked so well that we just need a vinegar-based sauce. We don't need a lot of tomato and ketchup on ours. Ours is delicious with the vinegar-based sauce.
That's Jan Parson. Thank you so much for talking with us, Jan.
All right, thank you.
She's the organizer of the Barbecue on the News Festival in Kinston that happens every May. And again, all this information is at our website. Well, speaking of food festivals, joining us now is Billy Roy, and he's this year's president of the North Carolina Yam Festival in Tabor City, North Carolina. Billy, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. It's good to be with you today.
Tell us about this festival.
Well, our festival is a festival that's been running for 31 years. It's not consecutive, but it started out in 1947 and ran through 1962 in Tabor City. Actually was the home originally called the Carolina Yam Festival, and in 1946 Tabor City produced more sweet potatoes than anywhere else on the face of the globe, earning it the Yam Capital of the World, which still carries on today. We're known as the Yam City. And that year, we marketed more than 1 million bushels of sweet potatoes.
Well, so what do we get down there? I'm assuming some sweet potato pie and some, you know, some ordinary and just maybe a casserole or two. Anything weird? Do you, like, mix it with Snickers and fry it or something like that?
Well, we are something that's new that's coming up. It's sweet potato fries. And the sweet potato is a very, very healthy vegetable for you. They call it a super fruit even, or super vegetable. And so we fry them up. We have a guy out of Fayetteville who actually made sweet potato ice cream, which you would be very, very impressed with. Very good stuff.
There you go. I'm going to go home and try to make that myself. So you know I've got to do this to you, right? You know I'm going to say this to you because you don't grow yams, right? You know this.
That's right. We don't. You know, here in the United States, the Department of Agriculture requires that everything that we do with a yam or sweet potato would be labeled as a sweet potato. However, we interchange that word yam and sweet potato. Yam is actually comes from the African word meaning yammy, and it refers to a starchy type root, which really is a huge root that they do a lot of sugary stuff out of, which the sweet potato is a lot smaller.
Yam is a tuber, and sweet potato is a nightshade, just FYI. But I take your point, and I'm certainly not going to quibble, and I'm very happy to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Hey, our festival is on the 22nd this year. Parades, floats, bands, all kinds of events all week long that we celebrate. So invite everybody to come on down to Tabor City, North Carolina.
That's Billy Roy, who is the president of the North Carolina Yam Festival in Tabor City. All the information on our website. We just got about a minute and a half left here. But, Andrea, again, talk about the importance of these things just in terms of, I guess, the diversity and what it tells us about the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, it's it just shows that our state is so rich in culture, and we have from all different genres of music, dance, theater, visual, and performing arts. So, our state, you can learn from others. If you take the time, take your family out, go as a group, and just learn and embrace yourself in something new.
And Molly, I guess it shows us that even in the age of digital media, people still want to get out and have a party together, right?
That's exactly right. We're getting ready to do that this weekend with our Mad Max Fury Road Party Like It's the Post-Apocalypse extravaganza, which is going to feature a bus with flamethrowers. You can imagine me asking for permission to do that with my poker face.
And also,
everything.
Just very briefly, a tribute to the Big Lebowski coming up, right?
Yes, yes. So, you know, we are what we love. And when we come together with other people who love what we love, it's so transcendent, even when it's something like the Big Lebowski or Fury Road. I do want to give a shout out too to, you know, we were talking about involving the community. So the Durham Biofuels bus is going to be, they're going to have a Barbarian bus bringing people to our event tomorrow. Hub Farm is going to be handing out seeds. The heroes of that movie were keepers of heirloom seeds. Tom Whiteside is going to have Fallout footage. And then the Scrap Exchange has been heavily involved, and they hosted a build night where we built sculptures and signs. Yeah, and
the name of that
things.
One one more time, the name of that event?
The Mad Max Fury Road event at the North Carolina Museum of Art, 6:30 tomorrow night.
At our website, Molly Matlock, Performing Arts Manager at the North Carolina Museum of Art, Andrea Lawson, Community Engagement Director at the North Carolina Arts Council's African American Heritage Commission. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Just ahead, live music with Durham's Brett Harris. Stay tuned.